that sounds good. I had, for the first time in my sobriety, I thought about not using my last name when I came up here. I'm not sure why that is, so that's why I decided to use my last name. I guess because of this camera and because of other recording devices. Everybody knew I was loaded, they might as well know I'm sober, you know? Palm Springs, huh? What the hell? I stopped my car today to call a friend who lives here. When I got back in the car, the little thermometer in my car was 122 degrees. Where I'm from, there are Creole dishes we cook at about that temperature. Wow. It was great. I've never been in front of these many people without being able to be paid to lie to you. So this should be interesting. But fortunately, it's real easy for me up here because I, number one, got to talk about the thing I like best, me. And I get to tell you what happened to me, and I don't have to make that up, you know. Nobody else wrote that, because I don't have to memorize it. As Mark Twain said, when you tell the truth, you don't have to remember anything, you know. And I was looking at this is certainly fun to giving away these golf awards tonight, you know. It's really something that a lot of us are familiar with. I'm putting a round white thing in a hole. Now as I think of it, that was a drug joke, not a sex joke, but I guess it could be taken either way, couldn't it? Well, some of us in the room, right? So let me identify here so you know that I do belong here and I'm not just like a ringer they called in because people knew who I was. Real quickly, what it was like. I was born in New Orleans, Louisiana. Thank you. It was a great town to go to boot camp in for this disease. I don't blame New Orleans, obviously. It has nothing to do. I could have been, you know, in a monastery in Tunisia and I would have found the monk making the wine, I'm sure, at an early age. But New Orleans gave me the opportunity just to really relish in the possibility of this landscape that I decided to create for myself. So a town in the world that has signs on bars that say happy hour any waking moment. When I was listening, it's very strange. I must admit that I'd never heard who was an addict before. When I got sober, there was no Cocaine Anonymous. And if anybody's counting, for what it's worth, I'm my 10th year of sobriety, so when I got sober, it was... No. Let me tell you something. An old man once told me that congratulating a drunk for not drinking is like giving a trophy to a cowboy with hemorrhoids for not riding his horse, okay? I'll show you pictures of my kid, then you can applaud later. So anyway, I was an only child raised in a very Catholic family. And my father, as far as I know, was an alcoholic. He left when I was two, so he had some other work to do somewhere else. He quickly got remarried, pumped about three kids out of somebody else, and eventually died of this disease, alcoholism, drug addiction. To me, it's all the same thing, you know, it really is. It doesn't matter what I put in my body, it's why I put it there, and what it does to me once it is there. I used to think when I first got sober that I was not a cocaine addict, that I was not an addict. I was an alcoholic. It was more romantic sound to it. Addicts gave me images of little apartments in New York somewhere, and with dirty needles and bad takeout food. And alcoholism was William Faulkner, you know. Much more appealing image to me, anyway. You know, the first emotion I remember having, can you hear me if I stand up like this? I hate bending over. It was alright? Was it not good enough? Okay. No, that's better. The first emotion I really the one that was primarily throughout my life, but still today is a frequent visitor, was a great deal of fear. Well, being a Catholic helped. I don't say that jokingly, you know, I'm willing to claim I've got about 12 inventories on the Catholic Church, but being Catholic, I have very heavy atheistic tendencies. But being reared in a religion that sort of told you that you were zero from the get-go only helps support those innate feelings of complete worthlessness that I took upon as my mentor as a young boy. All around my house were pictures of saints who were in some form of phenomenal pain or another. As another great writer once said, I would never trust a religion whose logo is a dead boy on a stick. Let's just move away from that for the moment. What it filled me with was something that I probably would have had otherwise. It was this feeling that nothing I ever did could be good enough. Nothing I could ever become would be worthy enough. And that's whose criteria I was using, I have no idea. You know, I guess we could, if we could go to John Bradshaw's house, he'd probably tell us, but to me, my dad left, right? So if I'd have been okay, he probably would have stayed around. You know, it makes sense to me at 5 or 6 years old, and if I was worthwhile, he would have not wanted to go away from me. And having no brothers and sisters, I had no other reality base to check in on, so all I had was a very loving mother, who unfortunately had to work, and so we didn't spend a lot of time together. The Catholic Church, which provided me with a great education, and also my appreciation for art and literature as I first exposed to it, but it was all, I was alone. I was constantly alone and a phenomenal coward from the youngest age. You know, I don't know why that happened, but I was always afraid of life. Very afraid. This is fine. I don't mind animals if I'm not deafening anyone now. So in order to compensate for that, and unfortunately I didn't discover alcohol or drugs until much later in life, for the first 10 or 15 years I had to use something else to hide, and what I used was fantasy and lies to myself, and made you believe that I was someone other than who I really was. If I had no idea about that, it was easy to make up somebody who would you like me to be. There are women in this world who have entire relationships with me under a completely false identity. It's amazing the lengths I would go to because of my fear of exposing myself to you. The chance came from the thought that if I was any good, I would have had a happy family. So if I tell you who I really am, you're going to run away. But around 16 years old, I discovered a wonderful medicine called Southern Comfort. I think it was my first country in Western Bond, Biloxi, Mississippi. I got very drunk for the first time. Drunk to the point where I seriously would have said the click happened. And all of that pressure I put on myself to be somebody else was totally lifted from me. It was like ripping off your clothes and finding this big S on your chest underneath. And I was so happy, incredibly confident, marvelously witty, and phenomenally attractive. And after I threw up, it was even better. But my younger life was that way. Even now sometimes when I think about my childhood, the overwhelming emotion that I have is sadness. But I don't make decisions based on that anymore. And I can tell you that truthfully. It's still there. It's a poignant story. One that hopefully I'll make a lot of money off of one day. So growing up, I found booze, and at 17 years old, I found marijuana, and not so much later in life. At about 25 years old, I found cocaine. I actually moved to Hollywood to pursue acting as a career. I go, you know, I actually paid people not to beat me up when I was a kid. I just could not, let me tell you something. This is a horrible story, but it just shows you the lengths we will go to. When I was 10 years old, I had lost a religion book. And I had to go to religion class next. And whoever, you know, Cincinnati Rhino, whoever I had to go to next, I knew that if I showed up in that classroom without that book, she would beat the crap out of me. She had done it before. So I knew that she would do it again. So I ran away. I told a friend that I had to go to the convent for a music lesson, and I left the schoolyard and just kept going. It was 10 o'clock in the morning. And I roamed around the city in the mornings until about 4 o'clock in the afternoon and realized, you know, I gotta work, you know, I'm 10 years old, I can't exactly like go get a job and live by myself yet. So I decided I had to go back. And I ripped my clothes, and I scraped my knuckles on the sidewalk, cut myself with a Coke bottle, and went back to the school, and about half a block from the school, took on the sort of Quasimodo profile, lumbered back, and told them the truth, that I had been kidnapped off the school yard. A big man in a blue trench coat came and took me along and put me in the back of a shed somewhere along the Mississippi River. Well, I tell you, I was very convincing. So they let me go home. Got out of that missing religion book, didn't I? Then the police showed up to my house for a report. And I gave a very, tearful, and I expounded the story with great pathos and trauma. I gave a description. And I thought I was home free, and they left. And about 2 days later, they called to say they caught him. So then comes a tough decision. Do I fess up about that religion book, or do I let this guy fly? Like the old story about Jack Benny when the guy asked for his money or his life, and Benny said, "I'm thinking." I actually thought for a moment, "Well, you know, I really don't have that religion book. But fortunately, something inside of me said, I can't let a guy hang just because I left this book." And I told him the truth. And obviously, beat the crap out of me. Yeah. Now, that's quite a length, it seems to me, to go to avoid the responsibility of my own life. And that's for alcohol and drugs. But you can imagine what we got into when you had that invigorating accomplice to accompany you along these voyages. I got out of high school barely. I discovered acting in my senior year of high school, so that helped a little. I had to join the Navy. Glide my way out of that. Got married at 20 years old. Glide my way out of that. I got to send me on to LSD, got a job in Colorado as a bartender, so I just wanted to live with him for a while, so it might be appropriate for me, because, you know, it can go bad in the mail. It's better to be by Acosaurus. Matter of fact, a member of the fellowship gave me a nickname about 2 years before I stopped drinking. I was known as the Beast around town. Until the end, I was rather surly. You wouldn't think of it looking at me now. But I was this large hulk of just absolute pain, disgust, anger, frustration, and disease. So, we're jumping ahead. I got out of high school, lying anytime I could. It was more preferable than telling the truth. It was always feeling that there was something missing in my makeup, you know, that there was a part of my brain that I didn't own, you know, that I could not click into life. You know, that feeling we've all had of being on the outside, of being unique. I mean, I really thought that it was true. You know, and I thought it until the day that I got sober. That somehow I was absolutely, fundamentally different than any of you. And I went about my life treating you that way because I was special. You know, just me being in my company was payment enough for you. So whatever I took from you in the process was, as we say in the South, lanyard for me. A little something extra. Your life, your money, your wife, your cars. I came to Hollywood in 1973. I went to Hollywood, I guess, when I was there, close to it. And I decided to be an actor because I discovered that there was a place where you could go and be somebody else and they paid you for it. It was appropriate for me. And I was definitely an alcoholic from the get-go, I'll just let you know that. I mean, I always drank alcoholically. I always used whatever drug I had until there was nothing left. I once wrote in a play, a guy looks at a fellow in a bar and says, haven't you had enough? And the man said, what are you, enough? I'm not familiar with that word enough. What is none? And there is some. Oh yeah, and there's more. But enough, I'm not really familiar with that term. That's how I used and drank, you know? So I came to Hollywood, and I suppose, you know, considering it was the 60s, everything seemed like it was pretty much under control. I went from job to job, and place to place, and car to car, leaving them when they broke down and walking away from them. Doing the same with relationships, but it seemed like that was an appropriate behavior for the Aquarian age. And everybody was doing it, searching deeply for the true meaning, all of the sort of peripheral stuff of like responsibility and honesty and integrity. Were passe mores of the Eisenhower generation, certainly didn't apply to the hip crew guys like us. The Tim Leary school of life. So I came here and then things really got chilly. In some ways, I guess I was fortunate in another way. I don't know if it was or not, but I got successful fairly soon in my chosen profession. I got on a series relatively early, had money to burn, and did. And it was about this time when I discovered cocaine. And I mean, Cole Porter wrote about it in a song, so it couldn't have been that bad, you know. It used to be a soda pop, you know. And I only did it to help stay up longer so I could drink more. I mean, it wasn't the cocaine. And the fact that I would go to a Lisa and Frank's at noon just to have just a cold deck, just to settle the brain waves down. Maybe just a shot of wild turkey to cup it and taste of the beer, because I didn't like the beer that much. And that was all I just thought I was gonna do that day because I had a lot of riding to do, I had an appointment to get ready for the next day. I'm hungry, maybe I should have another beer before I eat. I can't really decide what I want. And then it would be 4 o'clock in the morning and I'd be in some fat guy's house in the Hollywood Hills. Him grinding away Italian baby wax and he was charging me $120 for it. Then about 6:30 in the morning, crawling home. Going to sleep in the garage so that I wouldn't wake up my wife or children waiting until I got up and went to work and school. And then pick myself up out of the oil stain on the floor of the garage and go inside and sleep till noon. And go to the sun fresh, just to run back, just to get the brainwaves settled. Right, like deja vu all over again, you know. And I thought that was fine. I really thought that was fine, goddammit. And I work hard when I work. Sitting around the set all day smoking dope. That's tough. You know, I'm trying to memorize those lines. Jeez. Going 90 miles an hour down the freeway. I'm not going to be able to do the tapping joints. It's the car next to me. Yeah, sure, I had to send my family away to England to live because I didn't have any money, but the separation artistically was good for me. Moving on to the sailboat that a friend of mine offered me was good for my spiritual growth as an actor. Lying horizontal for 3 months, playing heroin and pissing an orange juice bottle was good for the actor part of me, you know? not getting up for days at a time was good for the actor. Unfortunately, nobody wanted to use the actor at this point. And I was just sitting on that film building, you know, wondering, what the hell was it? What's it called? Some guys always get the short end when it comes to acting, because you know, everybody comes along. I must have the wrong agent. What's the problem? Wrong agent. I've got a job with Helen. Oh, man. I wish I should start thinking about it. My family came back because I got a job that was going to pay for new apartments and take the airfare back, and I kind of forgot to get the apartment. And so they had to move on to the sales board with me. My wife didn't like that. So she went on trying to place herself, and I thought, well, you know, once again, I'm taken care of. Well, we can pick women, can't we? Or men, vice versa. I found somebody who really loved me and had her own agenda to have to deal with, and it was a perfect match. I sat with a gun on the table about 4 months before I got sober, thinking that it was time just to get out of here. But I was afraid that the gun wasn't large enough caliber to kill me. So I went outside and blew a couple of rounds off in the garage door. So just to check the size of the hole. See if it went all the way through the door. And then decided that it probably could permeate my brain case. And went inside and sat down to write the notes. Didn't have to be a taser, none of the news. And after about 45 minutes trying to write the perfect suicide note, I'm going to end on a great joke. My whole life is just going to end. I came, I saw, I went. It wasn't really working. I'm sick this time. I really am. After about 45 minutes, I realized that I couldn't think of the perfect exit line. I couldn't kill myself because of that. But now I know. Now I know the real reason I didn't do it that night. I mean, forgetting that I said accidentally, you forgot how many Quaaludes and how much bourbon and how much cocaine and how much LSD you were taking that day. Forgetting all of those times. There was something inside of me at that last moment that said, you know, this might change. Could. It could change. I had no idea what that meant at the time. I didn't have any faith, certainly, that it could. But I realized, after I got sober, that what had happened to me was that I had had a small moment of clarity that didn't click yet, but I had not lost all hope. And that came a lot later. I lost my train of thought completely. I can't look at my watch and talk at the same time I realized. I'm getting better. So, all right, let's get sober. One night I was sitting at a friend's house with a large line, a kind of a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar line of cocaine, running. And a fifth of Johnny Walker Scotch, black, of course. And, you know, I was standing on the other side of the room, looking at this pathetic, fat, smoldering hole sitting at this table, you know, sort of John Philip Newman apparition of a large, ugly, kind of troll-looking individual. And I thought, Jesus, look at that poor bastard. What a loser. And I was talking off about when I ran the business, how much better was it, these assholes in Hollywood didn't know what they were doing. And in that flash, I realized it was me, and then I was back at that table. Now, I didn't know the word surrender. You know, except for maybe the Carlos Santana and John McLaughlin album. So I looked down at that cocaine, and I looked at that scotch, and I was sitting with about five people, and I said, I'll be right back, we'll go to the bathroom. I got up off the table and walked out the door and got into my car and went home. That was it. I, you know, in that flash, I did what I think each of us finally has to do in order to get on with life. I totally gave up any pretense that I had anything whatsoever to do with this stuff and it controlling me. Absolutely rock bottom definite. I'm totally lost here. I am over. I have no other alibis. I have no other bullshit. I've got nothing to pull out of my pocket to prove to you that I'm okay. That it isn't the problem. You are. That I'm not the problem. They are. It was gone. Next morning I woke up, and I've been exposed to Alcoholics Anonymous prior to that. It's just a whole other story, which is really funny. So I went back to this meeting, and I've been sober ever since. Now, my first sponsor said to me that I had been insane. And he defined insanity as the definition is this: repetition of the same action expecting different results. And all of my life I have repeated the same actions expecting different results. Just like that Mr. Frank story. You know, what's going to be different today? And secondly, that I had to fire my mind. That my best thinking had almost killed me, you know? But it was absolutely true. And that everything I knew was wrong. So here I am, at, 31 years old, I guess, thinking I had an intellectual superiority over most of the people on this planet. Certainly an artistic superiority over anybody that I knew. But I have to admit that I was just like you. Jesus. I mean, you don't mean like all of them. I mean, you mean like Juan Olivier, I'm like him, or, John D. Rockefeller, I'm like him. I'm not like that guy shitting his pants with a butt stop. Yeah. But I'm actually worse than him. So here was this alcoholic who had his medicine taken away from him, and what he was left with was his disease. So I had to find a place to go to get help with my disease. And that was, for me, Alcoholics Anonymous, since that was all there was. I thought, well, I'm going to knock on or something. So I only tell you something though, you know, and if you're new and you're having a hard time, you know, this, not everything I say applies to anybody else except me. Once I accepted the fact that this was the place I had to be, and the reason I accepted it was because I could look at guys who had been sober 20 years, or 15 years, or 2 years, or 9 months, and realize that they had an ability to deal with things in life that I had absolutely no idea on how to handle. And I wanted to be able to handle it. If I couldn't do that, there was no reason to stay sober for me. You know, I wanted to be sober in the most exuberant and exhilarating definition of that word. I did not want to sit on my thumbs for 10 years not drinking. No, I don't drink or use. I can't tell people that, I wanted to be happy, joyous, and free. You know, I wanted the whole smooth sex. So I became a zealot. I wasn't working very much then as an actor, so I had a lot of time. And I got active immediately. I mean, active like taking that guy that was crapping his pants on the bus bench, taking him home and giving him a shower, you know? And I don't say that for any self-gratification. I'm just telling you that I think you have to go to any length if you want to get here, stay here, and be happy here. And that's part of it was for me. Meetings every day. And that book. I mean, I love that book. It was a book that I hated for a long time. What are we talking about? You know, these guys were 3 years sober when they wrote this goddamn thing. How did they know how to live beyond that? I thought, Jesus, if it is a 3 years sober, I can't use this book anymore?
where's the book written by the guy 5 and 10 years ago? You know, that's the one I needed after that. And forget all the cliches about how badly it's written. It's horribly written. It's sexist. You know, it's not a pleasant time. But I'll tell you what. Everything I ever did, it really did, what that book told me to do, helped me live a more successful life. And as much as I wanted to refute that, I could not. My first sponsor told me the only way to disprove a belief system is to adopt it. So the only way I could hold this book up and say it's bogus was to live it. And therein lies the trap. Because if I live it, it's going to work. And I mean really live it. It was very, very interesting and tough, my first year of sobriety. Fourth step was devastating and difficult for me because, I mean, I don't know about anybody in this room, I'm sure nobody else is, but I'm a bit of a perfectionist. And I think if you can't do something absolutely right, you shouldn't do it at all. So I hesitated for a long time, you know. I literally went and got books on writing style. It's drunk and white, you know. And I should be third person, or should it be like from an imperial viewpoint? It might be fun if I like wrote it in retrospect, like a flashback. I mean, literally, reams of paper. I'm talking about reams of paper. Hundreds of pages that I tore up. No, that's not. It doesn't have the punch that it needs. Finally, it got too painful, and I just had to sit down and say, I'm an asshole, a liar, and sick, and this is what's happened to me in my life. And these are the people who screwed me. And did I have anything to do with it? I didn't feel it, sure, but there was a lot of it, and I was just a victim. Slowly but surely, I cleansed a lot of the damage and the pain that I had created in my own life. The 12th step says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, you know, I didn't hear that for a long time. And I just meant something else to me. But I realized what it was telling me, that, you know, there were 11 things before this that I had to truly accept in my life and change the way that I dealt with myself. 6 months after getting sober, I was in New Orleans, Louisiana, visiting an old grandpa, my first love, you know, the one that's the best I could first hit. And she had just broken up with her husband, and she wanted to get drunk. So I took her out. And I got her drunk. So we were sitting in the bar in which at 17 years old, I asked her to go study with me. Big, big, big glass of brandy in front of her. This little glass of Coca-Cola in front of me. And she left the room to go to the head, and I saw the brandy, which was cognac, my favorite. And there was a mirror behind the chair, and I looked up and I saw me. And for the first time in my lonely life, I thought I had actually started to have a relationship with myself. And if I took that cognac, I was doing to me what I had done to many people in my lifetime. Let them down, lie to them, screw their expectations, compromise a trust that had been built. And never in my life had I thought that much about myself that I was willing to nurture that relationship. Such a cold screw the brains out, but I didn't. Not true, Elizabeth. I have been married to the same woman for nearly 17 years. And, that was okay. I'll accept congratulations. She should get the applause. She should definitely get the applause. She told me... She just looked at me and said, I know you're going to kill yourself. We're going to go do it somewhere away from the children. Man, you know, I was very nervous when I came up here. I am just so enthralled with the organization, with the whole, the entire fellowship of any program. I don't give a shit if it's Propane Anonymous. I mean, people who like to suck on Coleman lanterns, you know. I was watching security when I came in here tonight, watching all these guys with walkie-talkies, and not an ego amongst them. But how remarkable that, and look around us, that this group of people could be in any way organized for anything, unless it was 1 minute to two in the morning and you had no gas. Then it would be like, you know, the mother of all searches. But I'm absolutely enthralled with what you have given me in my life. You know, I didn't have, and that sounds cliche, you know, all over the bullshit things that you hear in these rooms sometimes, especially when you know they're true, and you don't want them to hear them. They sound like these little bumps. My kids and I students at Valley High, you know. I mean, they're just mundane. But I am absolutely in love with the ability that I have found to treat you well, with love, compassion, and more than that, to treat myself the same way. Because I'm alone. You know, I came here alone, I'm going to die alone. But I don't have to do it lonely. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous, hello Johnny Ass, by the way, I don't want to do that. No ego there, huh? No. Those of you who know who I'm speaking of know who I'm speaking of. He tried to get me sober and he's killed. He said I let him, and I'm sober longer than he is. I don't know how long I've been doing this, but it's late, I think. This clock, is it 10 after 10? Well, man, must tell me that nobody gets saved after 10 o'clock, so... I'm going to wrap this up, but unfortunately, a lot of my commitments comes from hysteria and fear, and I apologize for anyone who I know of set off by trying to be humorous about this. And the sincerity of my belief and love for this way of life is boundless, and I hope that anyone who is in here thinking that maybe it's not where they belong, it may not be, but I truly pray that we stay around long enough to make sure of that. And if you want to prove that you're full of shit, adopt the way we live. And if you really adopt the way we live, and you can look at us and tell us that, then fine, maybe we don't belong here. But if you belong here, like I certainly belong here, there's family. You know, I am in love with each of you, and I don't know hardly any of you. And in my life, I try to do what I can to prove to others that our way of life is not filled with stress and boredom and frustration because we can't, you know, we're fine, we just can't do those little good things anymore. This is amazing, you know, and I would like to thank David for asking me to be here tonight. I would like to thank all of you very much for cross-stepping me. It's been a great convention from what I hear. I just came today that look at us, look at yourselves and love yourselves, and I'm glad to be with every one of you. Thank you.